This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin. Adam, Antonio Brown is a New England Patriot. I don't think there's any other way to say it, but just to come out and say it, it is amazing news. We're going to get to that, obviously, right off the top of the show. We're also going to hit plenty about the win over the Steelers. Patriots still played a game, it turns out. It's not just Antonio Brown all the time. So we're going to do that as well. But before that, football, are you ready? Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. Sign up today to receive a 50% welcome bonus reward on your first deposit and start betting on your favorite pro or college team. Bet on every spread, every total, every winner or loser. Bet on who the first starting quarterback to be benched will be. Bet on who's going to win the Heisman Trophy. Get the fastest odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head on over to betonline.ag or use your mobile device to join today and use the promo code CLNS50 to get your welcome 50% welcome bonus. A minimum deposit of $55 is required for the bonus, and please see BetOnline's general rules for additional terms and conditions regarding bonuses. Now that we got that out of the way, Adam, what was your immediate reaction to the Antonio Brown signing? This is as big as I can remember with the Patriots.
I was stunned. I was actually in the press box at Holy Cross covering that game, and I saw the little alert on my phone, and it was a Schefter one, so I knew it was right. So it was kind of cool. I mean, I was stunned, and it was cool to hear, but at the same time, I'm a little worried because there's no real no real distractions with this team heading into this, you know, and they played really well without him, I thought. So I don't think they need him necessarily. I mean, I think it can make them better, sure. But I'd be lying if I didn't say that the part of me is kind of worried that he does become a distraction, that he does, sort of become a problem. Of course, he's so talented. If he gets on board and he learns the offense and becomes a regular player of the team, you know, this team, this offense will be basically unstoppable. And the Patriots have a really good track record of getting guys who have questions about their, you know, character, whatever, and making them produce. So in that respect, you know, I hope that happens, because if that happens, man, like, how do you defend this team? I mean, the Steelers barely could at all without him. Yeah. And, you know, and now, I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And you really can't go overboard enough if he does do what he's asked to do and he sort of gets on the same page with everybody.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for Antonio Brown and for the Patriots is something that Teddy Bruschi said over the weekend after the news, and that is that with that locker room, everything that you did in your past kind of gets thrown out the door, and all that really matters to them is what you do when you get there moving forward. So in that aspect of it, I do think that all the stuff that happened in Oakland, the ending for him there in Pittsburgh, I don't know if any of that really matters to the guys in the locker room right now. What matters to them is the work ethic and what he puts in now moving forward with the Patriots and what he can do there. And I think that, you know, there's reasons to be concerned about his dude and fitting in and all those kinds of things. And I do think that there's a little bit, and we're going to get to, you know, kind of who's the odd man out in terms of playing time. There is a little bit of what is Philip Dorsett has done nothing but work his butt off to earn more playing time. And they just seem to keep burying him under the depth chart under another guy. Last year it was Josh Gordon. This year it's Antonio Brown. It's crazy to think that Josh Gordon's now like the third or fourth most, you know, biggest storyline on this team. Yeah. Now that Brown is here. Last year it was like all Josh Gordon all the time. Now Brown is like kind of the big guy. I think the biggest thing though, when I heard the news, just from like a football mindset perspective, I can't think of a receiver in this league besides maybe Odell Beckham who fits the Patriots offense better than Antonio Brown, because you can line him up anywhere in the formation. Mm-hmm. You can line him up inside. You can line him up outside. And then you can throw it to him at all three levels. This isn't just like a deep threat. You know, this isn't right. Just to take the top off the defense type guy. Antonio Brown can run every single route in the route tree. He can run short, intermediate, deep. He's obviously excellent running deep. But I think that what the Patriots are going to be able to do with him is unlock him in that 0 to 20 yards range and give him a lot of opportunities too to run after the catch with the ball, which we know he can do really well. And he's elusive and he's got that kind of punt returner's mentality. So I think as from a fit schematically, this is as good as it gets for any player that I can really think of, you know, as a receiver to come in here and play for the Patriots.
Also, if you're a defensive coordinator, what do you do when Josh Gordon,
I know,
Julian Edelman,
they don't even have N'Keal yet.
Right. Well, N'Keal can take a sweet time. Yeah. Because you've got, say you got Edelman, Gordon, and Antonio Brown as a three receiver set with, you know, running back maybe Izzo, whatever. You can be so creative. And who do you double? Who do you give extra attention to? What? How do you play this team?
It's
a nightmare matchup.
I probably just play like match quarters and pray that you can just tackle. Just make at least make them throw everything in front of you, you know, and tackle from there. I think the biggest thing too is like looking around the league at all the other like top offenses. For the most part, every offense that's an upper echelon, like let's just cut it off at top five, they have a big two, right? You got two guys that are really, really good. You got like the Chiefs got Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. The Saints got Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. You can go right down the line. And the Patriots had Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski. Well, they lost one of those guys. So all offseason, the Patriots have really been aggressive trying to find their next, you know, second guy. And I think that they felt like they kind of lucked into one a little bit with Josh Gordon. But with Antonio Brown, A, it's just a fantastic player and a fantastic fit. But it also gives you a little bit more insurance against Josh Gordon. You know, if Josh Gordon now has to step away from football again, then you hope that Antonio Brown is still around, or vice versa, right? You know, if one of those guys doesn't pan out, one of those guys ends up going off the rails, you still have the other. So I think that that's a big part of this too, is the insurance policies for this team all around this team now are just so much better than they were even a few weeks ago, but even before they signed Antonio Brown too.
Yeah, I mean, just not just depth, but quality depth, you know?
Yeah.
This was a position we were sort of worried about, you know, like you said, and there's no worries right now, you know. No. I mean,
it's probably the best receiving core in the league just on paper.
Yeah. And Gordon,
maybe the Rams.
Even how much better Gordon looks.
Yeah.
He's huge.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, he's finishing his runs hard. The guys are just bouncing off him like he is Gronk. You know? And
Xavier Gordon takes for a second, though.
We're
going to get to it later.
Yeah, all right. But yeah, like you said, I mean, this is an embarrassment of riches for this offense that was already very good against the Steelers.
Yeah, and I understand. I really do. I don't want to act like we're not paying attention to the off-field concerns here with Antonio Brown and the attitude and his forcing his way out of really two organizations. The social media stuff, like the thing that he posted after the Raiders cut him, with him like running through his yard and screaming that he's free and stuff like that. It wasn't a great look. It wasn't a great look. But I don't think that I don't think it's all going to just magically go away with the wave of a Belichick Patriot way wand, but I do think that that stuff is going to get a whole lot quieter. He's still going to be active on social media. Don't get me wrong. He's not going to shut off his Instagram, but I don't think that he's going to be quite as in your face as he was. And you know, I believe in the track record with them there.
Yeah. No.
Before we move on, we do have to talk about who's going to see less snaps. I mentioned Philip Dorsett, who I really feel for, not only because I think he's a good dude, but I also think he's a good player. And he just keeps on getting buried kind of by, like I said, like by these new acquisitions. But I do think that there is going to be snaps to go around for Dorsett and for Harry when he comes back too. Now, obviously the top three moving forward, as soon as Brown's on the field, it's going to be Brown, Edelman, and Gordon. But I think that there's enough kind of love to go around, especially with how they're treating the tight end position, at least if week one was any indication.
Yeah, I loved what Dorsett did, honestly.
Yeah.
I think he's really earned his spot on this team. Remember, we were talking about him not even really being a deep threat this year in the preseason, and then he, you know, goes and makes that really long touchdown, or not touchdown pass, but
yeah, it was a touchdown.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, he's a complete guy now in this offense. So you want to see him stay on the field in some respect.
You can't take him
off the field. He's got too much of a trust with Brady right now. And he's doing too well for you to just like bump him off. I hope he keeps this, you know, I mean, obviously with Antonio Brown, you know, if Antonio Brown is on the same page and doing well, he's a more talented guy than Philip Dorsett. But again, we're talking about depth. We're talking about insurance policies. You know, I really like what Dorsett has developed into. He's come such a long way.
Yeah.
And he's really a nice piece for that offense.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a burner, but I think that he's developed a little bit more nuance to his game, especially over the last couple of years, to run a variety of different types of routes, but also to still be fast, right? And still use that speed. And his chemistry with Brady has really come a whole long way in just a short period of time here, really, over the last year or so. And I think the biggest thing with Dorsett, too, I actually think that he might be a little bit faster this year than he was last year. Like, the way that he ran up the seam on that first touchdown that he caught early in the first half, he was humming. I mean, he was really, I know he's a 4.3 speed guy anyways, but I really think that you could see how fast he is. And the Patriots, just to segue us into just the overall passing game performance and talk a little bit about the Steelers here, I think that my biggest takeaway offensively, other than all of the different personnel groupings that they threw Pittsburgh's way, six different groupings, 24 snaps without a tight end on the field, just going all wide receivers and running backs all over the place. But I think the biggest thing is that Dorsett, Josh Gordon lining up in the slot and running vertically from the slot, and Gordon in a lot of ways kind of replacing Rob Gronkowski maybe with some of the things that they were asking him to do, the seam routes, his only touchdown of the game. He was in like a reduced split, basically like as like a stand-up tight end. He wasn't in line with his hand in the ground, but that's a spot that we've seen Gronk in a lot in the past, and you mentioned that he looked like Gronk kind of in the open field, the way that he broke those tackles. So I think that they're realizing that the slot is still going to be a massive part of this offense, and they're just going to move guys like Dorsett and Gordon in there more, and it obviously worked on Sunday night.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. You don't really have a good idea in the preseason of what the offense will actually look like there were so many little surprises that I really enjoyed sort of watching, just because, you know, there were times when I was watching that game, and this goes for a lot of McDaniel's play calling, where you just don't really know even if you watch the team every week, where the ball's going to go. And it was impressive. I thought it was a well-called game in all those respects, you know.
Yeah, what was great about it was early on in the game, the Steelers actually did come out in a lot of man coverage in the first half. And what McDaniels did was he motioned guys into good formations and places where they could have a lot of space. One play I pointed out multiple times on Twitter is that James White third down conversion when they fake the jet sweep to Josh Gordon. And they bring Josh Gordon in that jet motion. And it just leaves James White the entire left sideline to work with. And when you put a guy like White one-on-one in man coverage with that much space on the sideline, you like your chances. Like, you think he's going to win that matchup more times than not. He obviously just read the leverage of Mark Barron a little bit and were able to, you know, get the third down conversion. Those types of motions and then the pick plays and the crossing routes that they ran over the middle of the field, they crossed the heck out of Pittsburgh in that first half. The Rex Burkhead one where they got the little pick rub wrap by Ryan Izzo and they crossed over 17 yards. Gordon's touchdown was a little crossing pattern. Because of all of those plays, and it finally added up on Pittsburgh where they were like, well, they're just going to pick us to death if we stay in man coverage. And we also can't really cover these guys in man coverage as it is. Yeah. So in the second half, they ended up having to go to more zone coverage. And that's when you got Dorsett's touchdown, the 58-yarder, or the big throw to Gordon down the seam. Those are when those plays started to open up, was when they had to go to a little bit more zone. And just to go back to the slot thing real quick for some context, all four of Philip Dorsett's catches on Sunday night were out of the slot. He had 95 yards and two TDs running out of the slot. Gordon had 64 yards on two catches running out of the slot. The big one that I just mentioned, and then also his touchdown was out of the slot too. So they're running receivers out of the slots now, along with Edelman, who's always in the slot, instead of a tight end like Gronk. But it's really looking the same to me, and it's kind of, the pieces are still kind of all in the same places. It's just different guys running those, and then you also have the formations. We got to talk a little bit about the personnel groupings. They ran six different personnel groupings, like I mentioned, and they ran 24 snaps. One of them was a penalty with no tight end on the field. So they basically just said, we're not even going to care about the tight end for half of this game. The issue with it was, and this is sample size alert, 25 snaps is not a lot, but they only averaged 4.5 yards per play when they didn't have a tight end on the field. And Brady only averaged 4.9 yards per attempt, which is awful, without a tight end on the field. He averaged almost 15 yards per attempt when they put Izzo on, which is like, it's just bizarre how that happens. But when they had Izzo in the game, their yards per attempt skyrocketed. His entire production skyrocketed. His completion percentage, yards per attempt, rating, all three touchdowns came with Izzo on the field. So there is something still to be said about the tight end. Now, Izzo also stayed in to block in pass protection 10 times. So I think that's a big part of it, too, was that they were leaving him in to chip or to block on TJ Watt or whatever the case may be a little bit. And that allowed Brady some more time to push the ball down the field.
Yeah, and that's good. It's kind of the role people envisioned for Izzo in the first place when he was drafted. That blocker, sometimes the receiver, you know, as sort of like a last option for him. So it's good to see that he sort of settled into that role and is sort of, you know, getting used to it. But they don't really need him to be a receiver.
No.
Especially with Brown coming in eventually.
Yeah.
You know? It's almost, especially now with, you know, the injuries along the offensive line, you almost can have the luxury of keeping him as a de facto sixth offensive line.
Yeah, it's funny because basically Ryan Izzo needs to learn, maybe like go down to the Celtics and learn how to set a bunch of picks. because right. That's what he's going to be doing a whole lot of. It seems like he's going to be blocking and he's going to be picking guys in man coverage for other people. And that's kind of okay. And they have so much firepower with the other four eligible receivers that they really don't, you know, it doesn't matter that he's like a Dwayne Allen, you know, essentially right. out there that isn't really too involved as a receiver. I think that it is interesting and something that I'll certainly monitor going forward, just how effective they are when they don't have a tight end on the field, because those numbers in the first game, and again, it's a sample size issue, but in one game, it was pretty staggering how much more effective they were out of like 11 personnel or even 21 than they were out of some of the no tight end sets that they were running. All right, let's look at the offensive line. Obviously, it wasn't the best of days for the offensive line against Pittsburgh, and it didn't matter. So, I mean, in some respects, that's, you know, something to be said for that. Isaiah Wynn was very good, though. I want to start there with him. I thought that he was extremely impressive, and Bud Dupree is like kind of a good warm-up for him. He's not exactly the best pass rusher in the league, but at least he got out there and was able to block a guy that's not a complete scrub.
Yeah, Wynn looked great, I thought. He looked like, you know, he was going to look after we saw him in the preseason. And so that's, you know, that's a huge help. Honestly, the offensive line was the only part of that game where you come out of it concerned. But that, you know, with I don't know if you want to get into the canon stuff yet, but
sure.
There's that. I mean, that's obviously very big.
Yeah.
But then again, off of that, then you're also breaking in Karras starting instead of David Andrews, who's, you know, you could make an argument for as, you know, the most important lineman in some respects in terms of communication and, you know, all that. You're not going to have him. So those are big question marks, you know, and those aren't. And again, like you said, you can get around them with everything they have. You can scheme around a little bit, but against a really top shelf defensive line, you know, they did well against the Steelers, but you don't want that kind of pressure against, you know, a team like that. And it could come, you know, but I just, the way I look at it right now is the teams that they're playing, they might have good defensive lines and stuff like that, and they could pressure Brady and they could hit him and they could give him sacks and all that. I just don't see any of the teams that they're playing coming up being good enough to beat them over that weakness.
Yeah, and also to cover enough on the back end, because like that Pittsburgh really got after Brady. They pressured him on over 40% of his dropbacks. This was not a good game by the Patriots offensive line, really, outside of Isaiah Wynn, and Joe Tooney was relatively clean as well. Shaq Mason had one of his worst games in a long time. He allowed 7 hurries in this game, and it was not, none of it was really that pretty. His technique was really kind of sloppy, and he looked rusty. I think the good thing about Shaq Mason is, though, is I'm kind of confident that he's going to figure it out and go back to what he was again last year, at least to some degree. But this was not a good game for him. Marcus Cannon, before he got hurt, TJ Watt kind of dominated the game at times against him and really controlled it. Obviously, we got to mention the snaps. It's driving me crazy because everybody just wants to talk about this. The shotgun snaps were not good, people. We understand. They weren't good. Ted Karras needs to work on it. Everyone knows. He knows. Bill Belichick mentioned it in his conference call on Monday. They were inaccurate. Some of them kind of were, you know, floating, I guess is the word to use. That they kind of took a long time to get to Brady. And that can definitely, I think, I don't want to overreact to it and say that it's, you know, the biggest deal in the world, but it certainly can throw off the timing of the rest of the offense, where Brady isn't getting it out when the other offensive linemen are kind of expecting him to get it out, and also for the receivers too, obviously. So it matters, but I don't want to overreact to one game there. But I do think that with Karras, with Shaq Mason, if he doesn't play up to his usual standards like he didn't on Sunday night, and now you have potentially a new guy in the mix here with Marcus Cannon going out, this is really the depth on the offensive line was something that we were concerned with anyways. And the Patriots obviously were too, because they went out and traded for three depth pieces and kind of rebuilt that entire backup offensive line. So that's really been the major concern. And losing a tackle, whether it was Wynn or Cannon, was always kind of the biggest concern that I had because of the lack of depth that they had there.
Yeah, it's this is a problem. It's something to definitely be worried about. It's like I said, the only thing I worry about after that game.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if I honestly think that, you know, they'll face some like defensive lines that can pressure Brady.
They just did on Sunday night. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, who knows how much that's going to actually affect, you know, the offense. Just, but the way I look at it, though, still is like, can those teams beat him? Beat the Patriots?
I think the biggest thing is that you're going to have to play a defense that's not only going to have great pass rush, but also great coverage. And the pass rush and the coverage is going to have to work together. One of the greatest things about getting Antonio Brown is, similar to Julian Edelman, Antonio Brown gets open so quickly and so early in his routes that you can pressure Tom Brady, but if he's getting it out in under 2.5 seconds like he was on Sunday night, 2.33, 2.37, something like that, it's not going to matter. He's still going to throw for 350 yards.
Yes.
You know, so that's exactly what happened with Pittsburgh was, they were getting there. They were getting home against Brady, TJ Watt, Holiday. That's a nice drill.
We're having work done on the house. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I think he stopped.
Yeah. The biggest thing is that those guys get open so quickly that they might not matter how long they can't protect for.
Right. Well, that's the thing is, you know, like you were mentioning with the jet motion and stuff like that, like you can do a lot of things other than sit back in the pocket and just sort of wait for guys to get open.
Yeah.
You know, and you can use a good pass rush against the team with screens, there's a lot of ways to do it. Now, I mean, it's not ideal, and you're not going to score 70 points a game with a bad offensive line.
Yeah.
But you can still get by.
Yeah.
Especially with the guys that they have.
Yeah.
And especially with the quarterback they have. You know, it's a bad problem to have. I'm not saying it's not like, you know, it's not good, but it's also not the death knell, because I still think that, you know, once Cannon gets back, whenever that is, they've got a good left tackle, you know,
they still got a good four fists of the line when everybody's healthy is still great on paper, and they have Skarnecchia. So they have great, you know, they have great pieces in place. And I think the biggest thing too, I don't want to go into a whole thing about comparing this to 07, but in 07, the Achilles heel of that team was that it was either Welker underneath or it was Moss over the top. Those were kind of that team's two options. They didn't have a great running game. They had an okay running game, but it wasn't something that they were a passing team. This team has a lot more flexibility and a lot more multiplicity where they can throw it short, they can throw it to the backs. They now have Brown and Edelman, who are two guys that can win in the short and intermediate levels, and they can get the ball out of Brady's hands quickly. So if they are in a situation where the pass rushers are just teeing off and they're getting after Brady and Corey Cunningham is out there at red tackle and he's getting beat or whatever the case may be, they have the options now in this offense where it's more than just Welker that can work the underneath part of the field. So I think that they have a little bit more flexibility there. I do want to talk about Sony in the running game. Obviously, Sony had, I think it was 15 carries for 14 yards, which is not good. The blocking wasn't very good either for him, But I do think that there's a bigger schematics conversation to be had here about the boxes that he is facing and the fact that they're just so reluctant to throw him the ball and to really throw the ball other than out of play action with him in the game, that it's just teams are just teeing off on the run right now when he's in the game.
Right. And when you get in the I formation, you know, you're either defending the run or the play action pass. It's very, that part of their offense, while effective a lot of times, can be pretty predictable. So that is where you see the stuff with Sony. That said, I think that they have to at least show more, you know, passing to him, even if it is just to mix things up a little bit. And create a little doubt in the defense's mind, because that will open things up a little bit more for him. And so if that happens, fine. I don't think they necessarily have to force it, because there's so much that they can do right now. And that's a little bit of a adjustment, maybe a first world problem of what they have right now, is they can do so many different things that, you know.
You gotta pick a few.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that will take, you know, I mean, I don't want to say that it's going to take time, but I don't think you're going to see the best offense of this team until later in the season, as usual. But I think the potential is there for, you know, some really great things, especially once Sony gets going. But I'm not too concerned if Sony doesn't run the ball, if they, you know, can score 30 points on the Steelers.
Yeah.
You know? So that's, but I think the running game will be, you know, will be fine. But, you know, that's one of the things too with the Steelers, is they had more of an advantage, against the run anyway, with this team. I wasn't expecting necessarily for Sony to go off on this front seven. I think it was smarter to spread them out and sort of throw the ball on them, because typically that's how they have more success against that defense.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh front, to their credit, both rushing the passer and stopping, that's a really good front. It's really on one of the better defensive fronts in all of football that they're probably going to face. Especially when you start throwing in like Devin Bush being there at linebacker now, that is a really, really good front seven that they just faced. So the fact that they couldn't run the ball against them, I don't think is that surprising either. The Steelers were one of the better run defenses in the league last year, and they had a guy like Bush who's a really, really good run defender too, and that's kind of what you get. I think the biggest thing, though, is that last year, you mentioned that they have to pick a few things and stick with those things that they're really good at. And right now they're kind of experimenting with a bunch of stuff. Last year was the 21 personnel, and it was, you know, kind of the power running game was like the basis of everything. And they worked everything around that. And I think the biggest thing is with this team is, first of all, maybe, you know, it's just going to be a different team, and that's just not going to be their most successful kind of grouping. And that's not going to be their bread and butter. The other thing is that, with that strategy, when you put Sony in the I formation and you're in a heavier personnel grouping, what you're really counting on is that your seven or eight guys can outblock the other seven or eight guys. It's just mano a mano. It's not like anything fancy schematically. This isn't reinventing the wheel. They're running plays, and they mention it in Do Your Job Part 3, that are basically just, you know, Pop Warner high school football, fullback lead plays and you know, draws in the I formation and outside zone. Like, these are stuff that you install as a high school peewee football coach. You know what I mean? So this is just, if your guys are not going to outblock the other guys or lined up across from you, you're not going to be able to run the ball out of those formations. That's just football.
And sorry to cut you off, but I think the thing that is important with that is that you do need it.
Yeah.
You can't necessarily go without it. There's going to be times when you are going to have to run the ball down the team's throat, at least for this team, in my opinion.
Especially late in games. You don't want Brady throwing the ball up 30 points like they were Sunday night.
Yeah, especially with the banged up offensive line.
Yeah.
So it helps, you know, to have that option. And it really is a part of the personality of the team. It really always has been under Belichick, wherever he's been. So, you know, I don't think he wants to give that up or anything like that. So it is a legit concern, but I think with the different moving pieces upon the offensive line, there's going to have to be some patience with it, because even though some of the teams they're playing to start the season aren't all that great, like I mean, Miami and all that, but like I mean, for instance, the Bills, like even though the Bills aren't a great team, they're good up front.
They got great.
So
and Ed Oliver looks freaking awesome.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's just, you know, whatever. It's something to work on.
Yeah. It's funny. We've been able to pick a couple of holes in a team that won by 30 points on opening night already. And, you know, I think that when you win like that, you assume that everything was, you know, peaches, right? You, like, assume that it's all sunshine and rainbows. Then I think everybody takes a step back and you start reviewing the tape and you look and you see some of the things that did go wrong. With Sony, you know, they averaged almost 12 yards per attempt on play action. Even though I don't think that he's necessarily the reason for that, he is a big part of that, you know, and something that contributes to that is that when he's on the field, defenses are automatically thinking run. The Patriots are already in a run formation with him out there. And then they also know the tendency. They know the indicator that when Sony's on the field, it's going to be a run a lot of the time. So the play action does work. I think the bigger conversation is, though, and I don't think that it's necessarily like we have to blame anybody, but why aren't they throwing the ball to him? And why aren't they spreading him out a little bit more when he is on the field? I think a big part of it is that Rex Burkhead and James White are really good receiving backs. So when you have those two guys, why would you put the third best receiving back on the field to catch the ball? You know, and I think that that's kind of the issue that they're running into right now is, it would be great to break the tendency and to come out in a game with Sony on the field and 11 personnel and shotgun with Brady and start dinking and dunking and throwing the ball to him 10 times in a game just to say, see, we can throw it to Sony. Like, don't think that we can.
Yeah.
And that would just break the tendency. I get that. But why? I think the issue is that he's the third best guy to do that with. So you're really hurting yourself almost by trying to do that and trying to just do it just to break a tendency, just to put it on tape. Now, maybe they do it in a game coming up here, like against Miami, where they might be winning by a lot early. Like they could be up 3 touchdowns in Miami by the end of the first quarter, especially if AB is out there. So if that's the case, maybe they can like use that type of game to break one of those tendencies and just put on tape that, you know what, Sony Michel can catch some passes. And don't just think that we're just going to run every time he's on the field because, you know, here you go. You know, here's 5 catches for Sony where he looks pretty good catching the ball. So maybe that's what they have to do. But I think that it's a slippery slope. It's a tricky kind of equation for them because they're just to break that tendency, you have to take guys that are better at that skill off the field. And I think that that's kind of what they've run into when the decision that they've made so far or that Josh McDaniels has made so far is just to put the guys in the game that are best and use them for their best skill sets. Let Sony run, let James White and Rex Burkhead catch the ball for the most part. And so far it's worked, you know, I mean, they scored 33 points and they won by 30. It's worked so far. Let's move over to the defense side of the ball. Obviously, another good performance by the defense, who hasn't let up a touchdown since the AFC Championship game, if you're into that sort of thing, which is pretty cool.
I am into that sort of thing.
Yeah. I do want to start with the run defense, though, and Dante Hightower in particular. I thought Hightower looked as fast and just kind of explosive of an athlete as I've seen him look. He made some tackles out there coming, you know, across multiple gaps to, you know, get guys down and stuff like that. He obviously blew up Ollie Villanueva at the point of attack on that one play. He made some tackles as kind of like a rangy inside linebacker that made him look maybe more, you know, like a Bobby Wagner or someone out there than a Dante Hightower. He was really fast, I thought, out there.
Yeah, it was rejuvenating, I think. That type of performance. And impressive. He looked like his old self, kind of. And so I thought, you know, that was, you know, we came into this year sort of knowing that the linebackers were going to be a good unit. But we didn't necessarily expect Dante to look like that.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about, like, we talked about it a little bit in training camp. Like, he looked like that and right off the bat in camp. Slimmer, faster, more explosive, but still almost just as powerful. Maybe probably just as powerful. I mean, he threw Ollie Villanueva just 320 pounds down to the ground. So he's still just as powerful. I mean, he looks great.
Yeah, and, I mean, again, another huge plus. Like, the defense is... I mean, this is another thing we talked about, is that we thought the defense was going to be hitting the ground and running right from the start, as opposed to a lot of years where it's, you know, you're giving up however many points in that first game, and then by midseason after a bye week, then they start to put it together. I don't know where they can go from here if they don't get injuries. Because that was a very impressive performance. Now they're gonna face, you know, good offenses down the line, and it's not gonna be 3 points a game, I don't think. But this was dominant. You know, like not only were they, you know, good at, you know, keeping the Steelers off the scoreboard, but they were forcing punts. After a little bit, you never really felt like the Steelers were a threat, and you kind of got the sense that the Steelers felt the same way. They kept trying.
The Steelers was really frustrated, you could tell.
Yeah, and so if they can do that to teams, my goodness. I mean, that's just going to give the defense those players know they're good. The Patriots players right now, this will only give them more confidence, I think. That type of performance on the opening night against an offense that can do a lot of good things. I mean, that offense is going to score a lot of points against teams. I mean, talk about the offensive line that they have. You know, Connor's a good player. Schuster's a good player. James Washington's going to be a breakout guy. I mean, and they completely shut them down. I don't know. It's
it was impressive.
They really
didn't, you know, watching the tape back and watching the all 22, they really didn't do anything. Like, they weren't doubling Juju, and they weren't like doing all sorts of crazy like sim pressures and doing the cover zero stuff. They didn't even bring that out. They were playing pretty much basic nickel defense the entire way, man to man. Our guys are better than your guys, and you're just not going to complete a pass. And right. The Steelers just didn't. And it was, I think that there is something to be said that maybe the drop off from the James Washingtons and the Dante Moncriefs of the world from Antonio Brown was a little bit bigger than people were talking about going into this game. Like, Johnny Hilton, Moncrief, Washington, like I mentioned, Ryan Switzer, these guys are a lot worse than Antonio Brown is at football. So that's part of it. But I do think the bigger part of it was, like you said, you know, this secondary, they lined up man to man across the board with a deep safety in the middle of the field. And they just said, our cover guys are going to shut you down. And Roethlisberger had nowhere to go with the ball. You know, he really had nowhere to go with it. There are a few plays that I thought that he left some yards on the field, but it was later in the game when, like, the frustration had already started to build. And that's, like, when you kind of see quarterbacks often miss open reads and stuff like that, is when they already think that there's nobody open when they snap the ball. And that was kind of the situation that they were in. It was a great testament to the talent of the defense, because they really did not scheme it up all that much. It wasn't like the Super Bowl or even the AFC title game when they had all the doubles on Tyreek Hill, where they had this game plan that was just masterful, where they were, you know, really doing things schematically to confuse the other team's, play calls and stuff like that. They just out-talented the Pittsburgh Steelers. They outclassed the Pittsburgh Steelers offense.
Yeah, and I think
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing, but it's also something that I think they can do to a lot of teams.
Yeah.
A lot of good teams. There's very few offenses that I've looked around at from this past weekend and said, okay, well, this is going to give them a whole lot of problems.
Yeah.
You know, but I know it's early for that. But I can see this defense being, you know, not necessarily this dominant, but, you know, being that type of defense against a lot of the teams they play.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's pretty something that Patriots fans were hoping for. And now I think they can kind of expect it.
Yeah.
This year they've, you know, injuries aside, obviously. But I think that's what you're looking at.
They didn't even have Kyle Van Noy. They didn't even have one of their bigger players in the front seven in Van Noy. Obviously, missing it for the birth of his child, and they still were able to absolutely dominate the game. And Jamie Collins kind of stepped into his role a little bit. They also used Simon and Winovich a little bit more than I think they would have if Van Noy was active. And it still kind of looked the same. And now they bring Van Noy back into the mix, and I think it's just going to get that much better for them defensively. I'm really interested to see what happens though moving forward when they do face an offense like a Kansas City down the road, or even Houston after last night looked pretty impressive. When they face an offense like that and they start bringing out some of the schemes that we saw at the end of last season with the zero blitz stuff and all the different types of things that they were doing up front, when that starts to go, then I really think this defense can be truly suffocating. And they in this game, they just, like I said, they were just kind of playing man cover one across the board. And Ben, just at one point in this game, it felt like in the second quarter, especially, was just throwing deep shots. He was like, all right, yeah. I got man-to-man on the outside. I'm just going to chuck it and hope that James Washington can run underneath one of these. He finally did run underneath one, and that was pretty much the only play that the Pittsburgh Steelers made all night on offense.
Right.
So it was, you know, that one play. The one thing before we wrap it up here that I do want to mention, though, is the pass rush. The Patriots only pressured Ben on 20% of his dropbacks. They really did not get a lot of heat on the Steelers quarterback. Now, it's a great offensive line, like you mentioned. It's a fantastic offensive line. But I do think the one thing that, and maybe some of it was strategic, like I said, they didn't scheme it up a whole lot up front like they have in the past. They kind of saved some of that stuff. But I do think there's a lot of kind of new pieces in the front seven that when you watch the execution of some of the things that they did do with scheme, some of the stunts and some of the blitzes that they sent, guys like Collins and Michael Bennett and Chase Winovich, who's a rookie, and Shaquille Calhoun, who played a lot in this game, I think that those guys are still kind of, you know, working on the chemistry of those types of things. Stuff like line games, like the stunts that they run up front, that takes a lot of chemistry to be able to have the timing and the rhythm and the execution of those down. So I do think that there was a little bit of messiness there up front, and that led to some of it. And I think that, you know, we didn't really talk about the fact that they do have a lot of new faces in that front seven.
That's true. And I think that you're going to see a different strategy against some of the teams that they play. Like you're going to see, you're going to see a more
aggressive
approach. Yeah. More aggressive approach. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that we saw in the preseason, and really all that this tells me is that they've got a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I feel like, you know, it's sort of like on offense, kind of, you know, they could do so many different things. It can beat you in so many different ways. And, you know, for a football team on offense or on defense or on special teams to have that kind of, sort of doubt you can place in another team's mind, where your people are coming from, where the ball is going, all that stuff. If you have all that working in your favor, a guy like Belichick is going to, you know, have the right chess moves. Not that he ever doesn't, but you need the players, and you know, I think right now, I think right now that whole defense is in a really good spot because they're good on the back end. They, like we said, they've got good linebackers. You know, can they create pressure with their front? I mean, you know, right against the Steelers, no, but against a lot of teams on their schedule, I think they can.
Yeah, so it's similar to how they didn't block very well on the offense. They still scored 33 points. They didn't rush very well against the Steelers' offense, and they only gave up 3. So, right. You know, it still kind of all worked. But I think that these are kinds of things, you know, we're a big line of scrimmage podcast. And yes. When you don't play well on the line of scrimmage, which I don't think the Patriots played poorly on the line of scrimmage defensively. I think a lot of the plan, when they went into this game, they realized that Big Ben's a really tough guy to get down. And he's also a tough guy to blitz because he's a veteran quarterback, just like Tom Brady, and it's difficult to blitz him. I think that they just said, like, let's just keep him in the pocket and let's not allow him to extend plays because we're so confident that our cover guys are going to be able to just cover one-on-one for 3 seconds that we don't mind letting, you know, the pass rush not really kind of take its time to get home. So I think that when they play a quarterback or an offense that has a little bit more explosiveness out of their playmakers outside of one guy and Juju, then maybe they will go a little bit more aggressive. But I think in this one, they were like, yeah, we could blitz Ben. We could, you know, scheme it up front. And all that's going to happen is he's probably just going to throw the guy off anyways. And then complete the pass down the field. It's kind of like playing a mobile quarterback almost, right. Even though it's not really mobile. He's an play extender. He's not,
right.
You know, he's not a Russell Wilson, but he extends plays in his own way. So I think that was a little bit of it too. But back to the line of scrimmage point, it's kind of something that you look at from football from a big picture perspective always, is that teams that play well on the line of scrimmage usually win the most games. And even though the Patriots have great corners and great secondary play and great receivers now and a great quarterback, they're going to need to protect and rush the passer to win this year where they want to go. You know, to get where they want to go and win the Super Bowl and repeat and do all that kind of stuff, they're going to have to play better on the line of scrimmage than they did on Sunday night. That being said, like we've been saying multiple times in this podcast, they still won the game by 30 points.
So it
might not matter right now, and it might not show itself right now, but when it's the AFC title game against Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes, and they can't block or rush the passer, you're going to start to see it. That's
right. What I'm saying. Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's harder to cover, you know, like with Mahomes has better weapons at the moment. And Mahomes right now, you give him 3 or 4 seconds to throw, or if he creates 3 or 4 seconds to throw, that's tougher to cover.
Yeah.
And what the Pittsburgh Steelers have.
Johnny Hilton and James Washington are.
Right, exactly. So, we do have to pump the brakes a little bit, but it is fun to get excited.
Listen, the way that this schedule sets up for them, too, with all those really tough games in November and December in the regular season, it's hard not to get start talking about 16-0 again. Because they're going to get out. They should at least. Barring them shooting themselves in both feet, they should get out to like 6 or 7-0 pretty easily. You know, they got Miami. They got 3 games against the AFC East: Miami, Buffalo, New York. They have Washington. They have the New York Giants. These are some bad teams. These are some bad teams. Now then in November and December they got Baltimore. They got Philly. They got Houston.
Yeah.
Kansas City. Those are the teams that we can start really like digging our teeth into. But I think there's a chance that they get to their bye week or they get to that Baltimore game, which I think is the first or second week in November, and they're like 9 or 10-0. You know, I don't know what game exactly that game is, but you know what I'm trying to get at. And I think that is very possible.
Yeah, you hit that middle stretch of the season, it's going to get fun.
Yeah.
You know, you get Ravens, Eagles, Cowboys, I thought.
Cowboys, yeah.
You know, Texans, I mean, well, they'll be able to get to Deshaun Watson. That's a really bad offensive line.
Yeah.
But then the Chiefs, I mean, that's you know, you look at that, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 game stretch.
Yeah.
You know, that's those are where the losses are going to come from if they do, you know. So
if they do it all. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But those are the teams that I, you know, from what I saw this weekend, I was impressed by most of them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, one win, they're 1-0. You know, anything can happen, but you know, you got to like what they had.
Yeah, I think this has a very, it could have a very 07 feel to it, right, you know, for a couple of weeks here, because remember early in 07, they played some bad teams that they ran the score up on pretty good, and they and then they really got later in the season, and they played like that Baltimore game, and they played a couple of right. really tough games down the stretch where they probably, you know, bounce one way or another, and they probably lose in the regular season, and I think that could have a, this could have a similar kind of feel to it, where maybe they get out to, you know, 8 or 9-0 before they start to really hit some adversity. But they will hit some adversity. That November and December schedule is not easy. That's going to be kind of a gauntlet. All right. I think that just about covers it all for us this week. We didn't talk about the Miami Dolphins. I'm sorry, Brian Flores. Maybe we'll talk about you next week.
I'm just happy for Lamar and that people are going to shut up for 1 second about him being inaccurate or a wide receiver or a running back playing quarterback.
I think Bill Polian should publicly apologize for saying that he was going to be a wide receiver in the league.
You know what he is? He's better than Baker Mayfield right now. I can tell you that much. You know, Mayfield looked like garbage against a better team, I know. But when they went up against each other last year, he beat them again. And Mayfield threw 3 interceptions. So let's calm down on Baker being the greatest of all time and Lamar being some sort of – you know what I mean? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Like he took his team to the playoffs last year and he still gets doubted. So, I mean, let's see what he does. You know, I thought, you know, he's got good weapons now, but some of those throws were really accurate anyway. So, you know, I'm like getting so fired up about this.
Yeah.
But I did like really think that a lot of the criticisms of Lamar were bogus.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that he's doing well.
Yeah, I second it. And I think the thing with Baker, I said this to somebody yesterday. The Browns all offseason said, well, we can't talk the talk. We got to walk the walk by talking. You know what I mean? Like they came out in the media and they said, we know we're talented. We know we have the pieces to do this, to be a good team, but we need to actually go out there and do it. And they did that by talking to the media all offseason. So, you know, you can say all the right things, but the one-on-ones with Baker Mayfield yesterday, they got like the dramatic lighting on Sunday Countdown on CBS, and it's him and Phil Simms, and they're talking about, you know, winning Super Bowls and competing for titles and all this stuff. And then he goes out and he loses by 40 points to the Tennessee Titans at home in the opener. The other thing about the Browns, I've been saying all along about their offensive line was an issue. It was an issue. Obviously, they were down a couple of guys, too, and that depth is an issue. But a little bit of, like, a feather in the cap to Belichick paying his guys in the preseason a little bit, because that starting offensive line and that starting offense in general, the Odell, Jarvis Landry, and Baker Mayfield play 0 snaps together in the preseason there in Cleveland. Then they come out in week 1, and they look really rusty, and everybody's like, what the hell? And it's like, well, maybe you should have let those guys play a few series in the preseason to work off some of that rust so that you don't look like this in week 1. I'm not ready to completely jump off the Browns bandwagon that I wasn't on to begin with, but it just seems like they thought that they were doing all the right things. They thought they were saying all the right things when they were really talking a big game, and they just were trying to act like they weren't. They were being frauds.
I do, though, think that Tennessee looks pretty good.
They looked pretty good down at joint practices, too. That's a good team.
Yeah. Vrabel's got them looking good. And, like, Derrick Henry is a straight beast. And, like we were talking about before, that division is really interesting because Jacoby looked decent. They got a good offensive line, a good running game, and good young talent on defense still. I definitely want to see what happens with them. And Houston, I'd like to see
Deshaun
them.
Deshaun Watson's so good.
Yeah, I'd like to see them block for him.
Yeah, Deshaun Watson and the Deshaun Watson to DeAndre Hopkins connection is, I mean, that is just, it's sexy. I mean, it is a pretty incredible duo. All right, we're pushing on an hour here. So
typical. Yeah, I'm sorry.
And you in a construction zone.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. Do you have anything to tease?
This is a lot of stuff going on this weekend, college and high school wise. Central Mass teams kick off this weekend. I'm going to see some of those games. We got somebody at the BC Kansas game on Friday night, and college and high school football is swinging in full time, and it's just going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been, watching it. Usually I only watch college football through, the prism of the draft. But I've been watching a little bit more college football just for fun this year. And, I think it's going to be a really good year. There's a lot of really great quarterbacks out there in college football this year. A lot of really good guys.
Good guys are going to play on the Dolphins next year. They're going to have their pick.
We can talk a little bit about the Dolphins next week, obviously recapping that game. That we'll do in a week from today or whenever it is. But I'm just so surprised that Brian Flores and Chris Greer, who are two Patriots guys, are tanking. Like, that's something that Bill Belichick, I don't think, would ever do. Not necessarily purposely lose games, but put yourself in the position where your roster talent is so bad that you're going to lose games. And in a sport like football and even any other sport, and you can ask the Cleveland Browns, so much of it is about culture and building a winning culture. So even if you're just competitive 4-12, and there's a such thing as a competitive 4-12.
Yes.
Even if you're just a competitive 4-12, it goes such a long way for your team moving forward than just being a laughing stock like they look like they might be.
Yeah.
So I'm just really surprised that that's kind of the route that they decided to go.
Yeah, and it can really snowball, and it's a much harder place to get out of than it sounds.
Yeah,
when these teams say, you pick one quarterback, and maybe you're hitching your entire franchise's hopes on that guy, and the rest of your roster is garbage.
Yeah,
then let's see what happens.
They're going to have a lot of cap space because they've let every single guy that they pay, any veteran that they have any sort of money tied into, they've let go. Lamry Tunsil was one of the best left tackles in the league last year. It's kind of like an up-and-coming star. They trade him for a bunch of picks. I get it. But it just none of it really seems to add up. So you trade Lamry Tunsil for a bunch of picks that you can hope that you can draft Tunsil. That's like kind of where you put yourself into. And poor Minka Fitzpatrick, get Minka out of there. If I was Minka, I'd have my agent on the phone right now being where can you trade me to? Get me the hell out of here. All right, at CLNSmedia.com, I got my film review up from the Steelers game on Sunday night. Go check that out. We will have you covered wall to wall. I'm not even going to say for Dolphin Patriots. I'm going to say for the Antonio Brown show on Sunday down there in Miami. There's going to be a ton of stuff going on, I'm sure, about Antonio. We'll have it all covered. Me and Alex Barth are actually going down to Miami for the game, so we will be there on Sunday. So that will be a lot of fun. Go check out our YouTube page, too. Me, C.R. Goodwill, Alex Barth, Trags, the whole crew is all over the YouTube page with a bunch of different videos from the last few days. And we'll see where this whole thing goes with Antonio Brown. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. I'm looking forward to covering him, that's for sure. I never thought I would ever be covering Antonio Brown as a Patriot. So
yeah,
it'll be pretty cool. And then Adam and I will be back next week recapping Patriots Dolphins. We'll see how it goes.
With no construction in the background.
Yeah, with no construction in the background. We got drills going on. That's what it's probably sounds like for the Dolphins right now. It's just construction zone as they try to rework their team. But until next time, signing off from Adam Hirschman. I'm Evan Lazar for the drill in the back as well. Thanks.